Broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, welcome to the QR Code, where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is your host. I just work here, but you can call me Q Ward.
Q is also your host, and then he does more than work here. He makes the whole ship go, but you are who we're focused on at the moment. We appreciate you tuning in. We have a great show in store for you today. We want you to stick around because we are going to be talking about quite a few things we think will be helpful. We're going to learn some things along with you and hopefully share some things that we've learned. And, you know, we always open the floor for you to share things that you have learned with us. But in this episode, we're going to be talking about whether or not it is possible to be a Black white supremacist. This is a conversation that Q and I we're having recently, and we have a few names to bring up and a few positions to flesh out. So stick around for that. We're also going to talk about the IQ scores of Black people relative to white people, because this is something that the far right people like to bring up. It's baseless, of course. I'll spoil it for you. It's baseless, but we're going to dig into what IQ scores mean and what affects them and so forth. We're also going to be talking about how we have found ways to engage with people with different political opinions. That's coming up for our dialogue segment. And then an important question that came up recently that really is worth us digging into. Was Jackie Robinson a DEI hire? Jackie Robinson is the baseball player that integrated the MLB. Was he a DEI hire? Does he qualify as a DEI hire? And I think that's something that will certainly help provide a framework to how we view the world today. All that and so much more. But before we move on, we like to start off with a feel-good feature. And today's feel-good feature, we're shouting out Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar, for those who don't know, is quietly funding college tuition for 25 Black students from Compton. Some of their identities have been revealed after years. During a recent UCLA ceremony, a student emotionally shared that he wouldn't be here without a scholarship from an anonymous donor. And now he knows that it was Kendrick Lamar. Media later uncovered that Kendrick secretly funded full tuition for 25 students from Compton, where he grew up. This story is credited to Vintage Art Times. And I think that the reason that it's not covered by like bigger media outlets is because, again, Kendrick was trying to be anonymous, which, based on what I know, a person who's been able to sit and have a couple of conversations with Kendrick, is consistent with his character. It doesn't really seem like he'd want a lot of shine from that. I haven't run this one by you yet, Q, but, you know, doesn't this feel sort of on brand for Kendrick?
Well, the thing is, you know, we can easily get bogged down with semantics and specifics when it comes to stories. Mm-hmm. Even if this story was completely debunked, you know, Kendrick Lamar has been credited with donating
a lot of stuff, yeah,
tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars to high school music departments.
Yeah,
you know, getting wheelchair accessible vans for schools, mm-hmm. Contributed to Habitat for Humanity, hurricane relief, you know, Black Lives Matter. You know, all right, inspired a nation and really a lot of the world. Mm-hmm. So this has not been proven true or false beyond probably that source, because I haven't read it anywhere. But it's not hard to believe at all. So yeah. I'm on the same
how he moves.
Yeah.
So I'll go with that. But shout out to Kendrick for that. All right. You know what? Us asking ourselves whether or not it's possible to be a Black white supremacist, you and I know the answer to that. White supremacy doesn't mean necessarily a white person has to be in the driver's seat. White supremacy can benefit non-white people. There were Black slave owners, and it's said that some of those folks were the cruelest slave owners in the country. The economic system at the time, in place at the time, was based around slave ownership. And so there are many people that would say that during slavery, you know, that's kind of peak white supremacy. And, you know, again, the idea that there were black slave owners flies in the face of the fact that black people can't be white supremacists. But there are some names that come up, certainly, you know, in our travels, Q's and myself, especially when we're talking with folks who are more conservative thinking than we are. And a lot of times they use the race of certain political pundits to hide behind and say, well, you know, Candace Owens feels the same way that I feel, and she's black. So this idea cannot be in and of itself racist because this is a black woman who feels the way that I feel, right? And that's a very common excuse. It's a very thin excuse, but a very common excuse. And I, you know, I'll let you share a bit here, Q, before we get into some of the other names here. But I know that this has been something that has happened, you know, for you as well.
I wish this question was either harder to answer or that the answer was flatly no. Like, that'd be an easier conversation to have. Like, sure. Could there be black white supremacists? Absolutely not. And like, we'd have to get order in the court because everybody in the courtroom lost their mind and just got out of control and slamming the gavel. Order in the court. Like, we just have to calm everybody down.
I can see it. Yeah.
Ridiculous question. Everybody's upset and flipping over tables and throwing stuff and pushing babies down and just pandemonium. Just chaos. Everybody, like, people would lose it if you asked such a question. I hate that the answer is absolutely.
Yeah.
And that it doesn't take us 10 seconds to think about it before we answer.
Yeah.
There are, for the entirety of the system of white supremacy, examples of black people that helped hold it up.
Mm-hmm.
We recently had a conversation about the Willie Lynch letter, and there's logic and sinister like thought and planning in that letter that led to not only there being, you know, black white supremacists, but for parts of history, black people playing a pivotal role.
Sure.
And making sure that system endured and making sure that we obeyed and making sure that we were subservient, making sure that we stayed in bondage.
Yeah.
So yeah, the answer's always been yes.
Yeah.
I just wish we would have evolved out of a position where it could even still be true, but unfortunately, there will always be room for and money for and opportunity for black faces that are willing to parrot the beliefs and the ideals of white supremacy.
Yeah. And I think that that's key, because when you have one group at the top and another group at the bottom in a society, recruiting a couple of folks from the bottom to the middle that's a very powerful position to have a human being, because in their minds, well, I live in a society where there is very much a binary. I'm either the haves or I'm the have-nots. But I, the individual, occupy a very unique space in this binary society where I'm not the zero. I'm not the one, but I'm not the zero. I'm somewhere in between. And as long as I help maintain this binary, then I will occupy a place of a privilege, a prestige. In the past, we would refer to this as, like, you know, those of us that come from black culture, we refer to this as Uncle Tom. You know, maybe there's, you know, and depending on the context, you could refer to this as like the house Negro or the head house Negro, which is, again, someone who occupies that little gap in between the binary. So let me make this live a little bit more. So I mentioned Uncle Tom. Another person who kind of feels like a black white supremacist that is from popular culture is Clayton Bigsby. Dave Chappelle famously played a character named Clayton Bigsby, a black white supremacist who was blind. And so he didn't know that he was black, right? He just thought he was white, and hated black folks, but you know, the comedy of course is that he himself was black. There's a guy named Uncle Ruckus, for those who've seen the anime cartoon The Boondocks. Shout out to Yamara Taylor, my big sister, who is the staff writer for that show when that was being produced. And you know, Steven is another person. Steven, for those who've seen Django Unchained, Steven really is the character that best embodies the idea of, you know, the head house Negro, right? And so all of these names will come up from time to time. But there are people in modern times that very much function in the same way that these other characters have functioned, right? These characters are dangerous, and they give a black shield to white supremacy. And don't be fooled, they're often very intelligent, very charismatic. They are propped up, exalted, and it's often suggested that these folks should be the model for all black people. And, you know, when you do the math and you think all black people should behave like this person, the reason that all black people don't is because, are all black people just, you know, stupid, you know, misinformed, uneducated? Or is this example not true to their nature, to their predicament, to their circumstances, to their plight? You know what I mean? And I think that conundrum is rarely faced by people that try to hide behind that black shield of the white supremacy, but it's certainly a question worth asking. Now, I'm going to share a couple of names here that we know about. Candace Owens, as I mentioned, she's a person that is on record saying that police brutality is a myth. Once upon a time, she praised Hitler for his nationalism. Weird. She made a George Floyd documentary released on his birthday. Like, it's just an extra cruel thing to do. And the documentary about George Floyd was to suggest that somehow he was the reason that he died, that he had a knee on his, like, it was his own fault or otherwise, that he did not deserve to live because of other things in his life as he was getting himself together or whatever this story is. A black woman made that documentary, right? Don't forget, she's also the person that wore the White Lives Matter shirt, which is deeply insulting to the majority of black people, next to Kanye West in Paris for Fashion Week. Another person, Justice Clarence Thomas. He's a black conservative that wants black people to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Let's forget for a second that that's impossible to do. But, you know, it's a common saying. He's one of those folks, right? Nothing wrong with him so far. But he's closest to the character Steven from Django. He is the embodiment of skin folk and kin folk. So we don't count on him to support a black agenda. Indeed, the opposite. And his wife, who is white, by the way, not that that matters, but she is. She participated in and protected those involved with January 6th, right? Okay, let's go to Herschel Walker. He was a name that was in the headlines a few years ago, and then, of course, back when he played in the NFL. He is the embodiment of everything the right supposedly despises about black men in America, but celebrity culture gave him a head start because of his name, and as a result, he got to at least try to play the political game. And then a big name that we know around here, Kanye West, or Ye. Remember, he's the one that said George Bush doesn't care about black people. So once upon a time, he was that Kanye West. But lately, you know, since then, he's worn a Confederate flag, said slavery was a choice, said Harriet Tubman never freed the slaves. Obviously, the MAGA hat, the White Lives Matter shirt, fraternizing with known white supremacists, then became a full-blown Nazi, praising Hitler, making music about Hitler. So the answer is yes, it is possible for black people to be white supremacists. Now, IQ scores. this one came up because, you know, we don't really dig into the corners of the internet. We just don't really need to do that. But every so often something pops up because we have to pay attention to conversations on the far right. And I'll be transparent. I do it probably more than I should. And Q has a pretty, pretty healthy relationship with far right propaganda because he protects his peace. A lot better than I do, and I'm still learning from you, Q. But either way, we do have to look into this stuff. We have to know kind of what these people are thinking, talking about, saying, right? In order to have conversations that we feel will be fruitful and that might penetrate, maybe, okay? So I'm going to share a bit. This comes from Quora, right? The online forum where people post questions and the other people answer them. So this is not, you know, well-sourced, but it does present an interesting question and an interesting thought-provoking response, which Q and I are prepared to discuss. So the question posted says, don't most blacks have a lower IQ than whites? Do you believe in evolution? Blacks look different, as do Asians and Caucasians. Evolution doesn't stop with skin pigment. Okay, that's the question. The answer, the irony here is extremely painful, suppressing the urge to engage in ad hominem. Thomas Sowell discovered old military mental test results. Quote, differences in mental test scores among different racial and ethnic groups were taken as proof of genetic differences in innate mental ability during the progressive era in the early 20th century. Progressives regarded the fact that the average IQ test score among whites was higher than the average among blacks as conclusive proof of genetic determinism. Okay. And we talk a lot about data and misinterpreting data and cognitive bias and so forth on this show. So allow me to continue. The answer continues. A closer look at mental health data, however, shows that there were not only individual blacks with higher IQs than most whites, but also whole categories of whites who scored at or below the mental test scores of blacks. Among American soldiers given mental tests during the First World War, for example, white soldiers from Georgia, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Mississippi scored lower on mental tests than black soldiers from Ohio, Illinois, New York, and Pennsylvania. Among other groups of whites, those with average mental test scores no higher than the average mental test score among blacks included those in various isolated mountain communities in the United States, those living in the Hebrides Islands off Scotland, and those in isolated canal boat communities in Britain. Looking at achievements in general, people living in geographically isolated environments around the world have long lagged behind the progress of people with a wider cultural universe, regardless of the race of the people in these isolated places. When the Spaniards discovered the Canary Islands in the 15th century, they found people of a Caucasian race living at Stone Age level. That's about all I'm willing to give on this question. Using common sense, you'll only be able to determine this properly if everyone is equally given a good education that is consistent across the board and over a substantial period of time. And I don't think we have ever seen that. There are definitely many, many, many black people with higher IQs than you. Okay, I'm going to just read one more thing, Q, and then I want you to jump in. But to provide context for folks who might have heard this, might believe this, or are susceptible to this type of rhetoric, black people are less intelligent, whatever. I'm going to share this. This is from the BBC. Being poor can sap a person's mental resources, research published in the Journal of Science suggests. The work, external by an international team, demonstrates how poverty takes its toll on cognitive function, leaving less mental capacity for other tasks. The evidence comes from two studies carried out in India and the US. Previous data had shown a link between poverty and bad decision making, but the root causes of this correlation were unclear. The US, British, and Canadian team tried to shed light on this chicken and egg puzzle by isolating the financial factor from others that might interfere with the results. One part of the study used the natural financial cycle tied to the crop cycle of sugarcane farmers in India. The farmers go through three crucial stages in the cycle: before the harvest, when they have taken out loans to grow the crops and thus are extremely poor, and then after the harvest but before being paid, when farmers are at the greatest extent of their poverty, and after being paid. Okay. So, you know, you can read the rest of the article if you want, but suffice it to say that there's a cycle embedded in the farmer's fiscal year that affects their cognitive abilities, their capacity to score higher on IQ tests, right? Now, I did some additional research here. Last thing I'll share, and I have it written down, so I'll just read it. Besides genetics, because this is the argument for, you know, white supremacists, people that are racist, so forth, is to suggest somehow that white people are genetically superior. And intellectually superior based on their whiteness or their genetics, right? So besides genetics, environmental factors such as socioeconomic status, education, nutrition is a big one, okay? Early childhood experiences, traumas, etc., prenatal factors, physical exercise, age, health, stress, sleep deprivation, and exposure to toxins read about environmental racism, all have been known to affect IQ. Okay. So I wanted to share this. This is how you get people from like Appalachia, you know, largely white communities, score lower tests, IQ tests, or people who are live in food deserts, you know, black communities around the country, you know, or whatever. And so there are factors beyond your genetics that affect your capacity to learn and to grow. I know you know all this stuff, Q, but I just want to get your thoughts here.
You know, we brought up this topic before.
A while ago, yeah.
And I remember not wanting to talk about it because I just thought the question was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, you know, begging the question of seriously considering a genetic genome-based lack of intellect because of the melanin in your skin today should be a ridiculous thing to ask out loud.
Yeah.
You know, even back when this question was being begged, it was with intent. And we've used the words pseudoscience, which I hate because it makes it sound like a science. It makes it sound
bogus science. Yeah.
Some legitimacy. It was just insanity. It wasn't science at all. We're going to prove a conclusion that we've already reached by creating our own data and our own subsets and no peer review. And if it is peer review, it's somebody who already agrees with me before we even started. Like, it's just like,
there's nothing scientific about the process.
There's no scientific method or process in you know, tied to it. And again, I think when everyone knows the answer to the question before we ask it, then asking it is a waste of time. Mm-hmm. And both sides of the argument knew the answer before we asked it. So it's a frustrating thing to ever have been pondered. But the same people that used God and Jesus to justify slavery and kidnapping and human trafficking pose these kind of questions, all to justify the same things, right? We can prove that they're less than human, that they're less than us, that they deserve this awful treatment, and or that we tamed and trained the savages so they benefited from the way that we treated them. We can feel better about ourselves, and our children can smile in the pictures as we pose next to the most heinous things that we've ever done to other human beings at picnics of all places. So entertaining this with even a modicum of actual question mark, like we don't already know, was kind of an annoying idea to me. But I think, you know, as my brother would typically say, sometimes you have to say the ridiculous things out loud, reframe them as ridiculous so that people don't get caught up in pondering whether or not this is something they should ever consider. So no one else has to ponder this. We did it for you. You're welcome.
Yeah. And I'll give a little bit of a peek behind the curtain. I wouldn't say kicking and screaming, but, you know, when this came up for us to discuss, Q was very much like, do we need to do that again? Because I understand it, because it's like by taking it seriously and talking about it, it's almost like we're dignifying it, or we're giving it a modicum of credibility, which it doesn't deserve, you know. But the fact is, there are some people who might feel that way, and they might end up in your life, and hopefully now you know how to engage with them. So moving on, you know, something I've noticed lately, Q, is that, you know, when we see police at events that we go to, because we have to move around the country quite a bit, and a lot of times we're around, you know, important folks, elected officials, dignitaries, that sort of stuff. And, you know, we're at the other end of the spectrum, too. We're at protest. We're, you know, whatever. But we're, you know, police are a part of how we move around. You know, they're there constantly. In recent years, I've noticed that the police are kind of keeping their faces covered. And that feels super weird, right? So, well, first off, you've noticed this, too, right?
It's impossible not to notice. And it's interesting that because I saw something online earlier today where someone was calling something like this weird. And I thought weird was a weird choice. Mm-hmm. This is terrifying.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Like weird makes it seem like not all that bad, just kind of nuanced.
Yeah, annoying.
No, this is the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I have to drive down the street. You know, the law enforcement vehicles have always made me uncomfortable. Imagine how that feels now.
When you don't know who the person is and you can't recognize them again, it feels like there's no way to protect yourself or get some sort of recompense if this doesn't go your way. Well, there's an article that came out from The Guardian, and I think that it kind of speaks to this phenomenon, so I'll share. Some wear baklavas, some wear neck gaiters, sunglasses, and hats. Some wear masks and casual clothes. It's a trend that has sparked alarm among civil rights and law enforcement experts alike. Mike German, a former FBI agent, said officers' widespread use of masks was unprecedented in U.S. law enforcement and a sign of a rapidly eroding democracy. Quote, masking symbolizes the drift of law enforcement away from democratic controls, he says. Now remember, this is a former FBI agent. All right. The Department of Homeland Security has insisted masks are necessary to protect officers' privacy, arguing without providing evidence that there has been an uptick in violence against agents. Okay, so officers and privacy feels a little weird, because I know that when you ask an officer for their name and their badge number, they're supposed to give it to you. Like, that's like a law, and the officers work for the public. So if you're a public servant, you know, privacy is kind of you're working for the public. So the privacy part is not compatible with the public part. You dig what I'm saying? Anyway, I'll finish. But German argued the long-term consequences could be severe. The practice could erode trust in the U.S. law enforcement agencies. Quote, when it's hard to tell who a masked individual is working for, it's hard to accept that it is a legitimate use of authority, unquote. He noted, and he said, when real agents use masks more frequently, it becomes easier for imposters to operate. This is something that we know because, you know, the no-knock warrants, we had a whole deal about that. We probably spent a month on that. No knock warrants. People can just kick in the door and say they're the police, get on the ground, and you don't know if they are the police or not, right? So, and that's very scary. And if you're a black person and you're exercising your Second Amendment right, that could be the end of your life. Somebody just kicked in the door, said they were the police, you were trying to protect yourself, and then you die. And we have stories about that, of course. All right, I'll finish. German, who previously worked undercover in white supremacist and militia groups and is now a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice, a nonprofit, spoke to The Guardian about the dangers of officer masking, why he thinks officers are concealing themselves, and how far the U.S. has deviated from democratic norms. Of course, you can check out the rest of the article again. That's on The Guardian. But, you know, any thoughts to add here, Q? If not, I'll jump
in. No, I mean, you said it all, man. When they're wearing clothes and presenting themselves in a way that literally anyone can. And in this current climate where immigrants are being targeted, say I was a white racist, white supremacist who wanted to abduct, kidnapped, beat up, harm, unalive, torture immigrants. I could pull up to any part of town in any city where I know there's a concentration of immigrants, present myself with a gaiter on and a hat and sunglasses and a flannel shirt, have a weapon, and, you know, do whatever I want to them. And the public, people watching, wouldn't know whether to intervene or run away, or, you know, nobody would know how or where to look for them, because this is exactly the same way that actual law enforcement is doing it. So there's no due process, no actual procedures, no identification, no uniforms, and your face is covered. It could be literally anybody. And we've seen cases where it is anyone. Mm-hmm. So this is terrifying. Like I said, it's not weird. It's scary. It's can't sleep at night uncomfortable, because all of us know someone who might be a victim of one of these actual or pretend attacks. And notice that the actual one is just as terrifying, because it's not like there's proper procedure being followed. They're not being more kind or following more rules or more laws or making sure they don't harm or conveniently lose you in the system. this is a terrifying thing to be true right now and not being talked about enough, I don't think.
Well, I'm glad I have you to talk about it with, and we're going to keep talking. So stick around if you want to check that out.